What the heck is up, cyberspace? It's Bree coming back at you with another episode of Breeing Myself, a lifestyle podcast featuring the ramblings of Bree, myself, and I. So today we are getting into the heavy stuff as promised. Monday is my heavy content day. So today we are going to talk about it with a capital I, the it that nobody really likes to think about or talk about. And I'm going to preface this entire thing by saying that this is one of my personal least favorite topics, which is kind of exactly why I need to talk about it, because it's uncomfortable and it's difficult, and I know I can't possibly be the only person going through kind of a crappy time right now. So, kids, let's talk about it. Let's talk about grieving. So, I was scrolling through Pinterest earlier this morning, trying to figure out something to say, because I don't know, I just really have a deeply rooted and really overwhelming urge to make this podcast a good one, that can help a lot of people. So I wanted to start with my top 10 favorite quotes about grief, which, wow, it really did take these past couple months for me to even have favorite quotes about grief. I don't think that would have ever been a particular area that would have caught my attention prior to some of the things that I've experienced recently. But so here they are, 10 of them. So the first one is, "Grief is the last act of love we have to give to those we loved. Where there is deep grief, there was great love." Number two, "Grief is like the ocean. It comes in waves, ebbing and flowing. Sometimes the water is calm and sometimes it's overwhelming. All we can do is learn to swim." Number three, "Grief is such a lonely thing. There is no one in it with you. Others may grieve for the same soul, but they do not grieve exactly for what you also grieve. No one has lost precisely what you have lost. Not exactly, never exactly. We are in it alone." And then number four, "The reality is that you will grieve forever. You will not get over the loss of a loved one. You will learn to live with it. You will heal and you will rebuild yourself around the loss you have suffered. You will be whole again, but you will never be the same, nor should you be the same, nor should you want to." Number five, "I sat with my anger long enough until she told me her real name was grief." Number six, "Sometimes it's okay if the only thing you did today was breathe." Number seven, "For the rest of my life, I will search for moments full of you." Number eight, "We talk about them, not because we're stuck or because we haven't moved on, but we talk about them because we are theirs and they are ours, and no passage of time will ever change that." Number nine, "Grief never ends, but it changes. It's a passage, not a place to stay. Grief is not a sign of weakness, nor a lack of faith. It is the price of love." And we're going to come back to that one. Because I really, really like that one for a lot of different reasons. And number 10 is, "I've changed irrevocably, permanently. My soul is richer and my heart is fuller in brokenness than it ever was without. I've learned true despair and it's made me learn to appreciate true joy." So those are some thoughts that I just want you guys to keep in mind. I hope that one of those or some of those spoke to a few of you. And those are just some thoughts that I want you to keep in mind as we go into this podcast. Grief is a really weird emotional place to be in. It's really confusing and it's really upsetting and it's multifaceted. And so that's why I think there needs to be conversation held about it. So I'm going to give you a little bit of the psychological standpoint and then give you some of my own personal experiences in hopes that maybe somebody out there can take that and do something with it. So yeah, here we go. So one of the dictionary definitions of grief is deep sorrow, especially that caused by someone's death. But I want to preface this whole thing by saying that yes, that's the context that I'm framing grief in for this particular podcast. But grief really is a resulting emotion from any loss experience. And there are actually 44 different loss experiences that can evoke a grief response, including moving, job instability, divorce. These are all things that have grief attached to them or can have grief attached to them. So I didn't want to negate any of those experiences just because I'm not necessarily talking about the specifics of those. I don't know the I don't know the specifics. I told you guys this would be raw, no editing. The specifics of a lot of those. So I'm just kind of going to speak to what I know, but I just wanted to acknowledge that those are also experiences that a lot of these principles and things that I'll be talking about can kind of apply to. So I just wanted to touch on those experiences a little bit too, just initially, even if that's not the theme of the whole thing here. So yeah. So some of you may have heard about the Kubler-Ross model, which is more commonly known as the five stages of grief. And you probably have heard conversation about that in relation to grieving after losing somebody. But actually, fun fact that I learned in my psychology class last semester, the stages of grief were originally designed in the context of terminally ill patients, like after they've been diagnosed. So this doesn't, and that probably has a lot to do with why psychologists are finding today that it doesn't necessarily apply to people who are grieving as it relates to death in the way that it was originally thought it would apply. We're finding now that it's not as linear as was originally suggested, and that you skip stages, or that you go through stages more than one time, or that that it doesn't happen in this, like, step by step, like, we're gonna move through these five things and then we're done type thing. But there is still evidence of working through some of these stages, and so I just wanted to kind of give a brief overview of those. So the first is denial, the second is anger, then bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Like I said, those are kind of subjective and really personal experiences, and everybody doesn't experience those the same way. I really wanted to touch base on that everybody kind of does this differently. And so you might go through some of those in different capacities, or you might not. My experiences haven't necessarily been, I don't think, directly tied to any particular stage. It's a little rough for me to quantify that, I think. But I can just give you kind of what I have, my personal stages, I guess, in no particular order, but just the things that I've seen and the things that I've experienced and what I've kind of learned from those experiences is kind of just how I want to kick things off. So we're gonna get right into it. So basically the entirety of my life, ever since I was little, has in some way been shaped by loss or by grief. Literally starting with when I was born. My maternal grandmother, she died 5 years before I was born, and my parents are divorced, so I live primarily with my mom, and so that has been a really large part of my life experience, is watching my mom kind of learn to cope with that aspect of her life, and being raised in a situation where my mom is... she was very close with her mother, and so trying to have that influence, even though her mom couldn't be here to teach me things and to influence me directly herself, still just as I was little, watching my mom still very much try to make me aware of who she was and the things that she did and the things that she was interested in and where certain qualities and personality traits that I have come from. And so, like I said, very early on, this idea of loss and of grief and of trying to kind of pick up the pieces and move on and create a new normal has been really present in my life. I went to my first funeral when I was, I think I was eight. Eight sounds right. I don't know if it is right, but it sounds right. Yeah, I was eight. I was 8 years old when I went to my first funeral, and it was absolutely traumatic. Still to this day, I get freaked out when I think about that incident. It really kind of negatively impacted my views on loss and on what grieving is and like how to do that. And it took me a really long time to kind of wrestle with that and cope with that. That was like a really difficult experience for me. Because like I said, it was my first one. I had never been to one, and I hadn't seen the individual in a really long time, and she had been ill, and so she looked a lot different than I had recalled, and the whole casket thing, and it was just like a really big, like, catastrophe. It was just absolutely awful. So it took me a really long time to kind of change my perspective on death and to begin to see the emotions that can come from it other than fear. Because I think at that time I was just too like scared by everything to like properly grieve that individual. It was a family friend, and so I didn't really, I don't think, ever deal with that in a way that I probably would have liked to. But then again, I was little, so I didn't really know any better. But it took me, like I said, a really long time to come out of that. And then when I was 16, my grandfather died after a short illness, my maternal grandfather. So my mom has now lost both of her parents. And that was also really difficult, just in that that was the first loss I had experienced that was so close to me. I had never gone through one that hit or impacted so directly. So that one was difficult for that reason, and just because he had been sick for a little bit, and so, you know, you adjust your routine to that sort of thing, and then when suddenly that this isn't the routine anymore, you know, of going to check on him or like doing XYZ thing, or it just kind of rocks the boat a little bit, I found. So that was a little bit of a difficult adjustment for those reasons. But I think a lot of that time I was just kind of numb, and I just felt really alone in that. Looking back, I am comfortable saying that I have friends, and for the most part, my friends did a really excellent job of being there for me and supporting me. But in a lot of ways, I wish that my friends had been a little bit more active participants in helping me deal with that. That was a very lonely experience for me, and just going through that feeling of that I had to be strong for my mom and that I couldn't display certain emotions because I didn't want my mom to fall apart. That was really, really challenging looking back, and also had a lot to do with how I view grief. And I think that one was just different because I was trying not to feel stuff, and I was just kind of numb, and it all just didn't really feel real. And so I didn't do a lot of the feelings aspect of that because it just kind of didn't feel like it was happening. But this last one, happened a few months ago. A family friend, clergy member of mine passed away. And that has been hard. That's been hard, not just in a way of that I had a relationship with this person or that my family had a relationship with this person, but to see the people that I know, you know, and being close with that individual's family, and to see that and to see how that impacts a community and shapes that, has also been a little bit of an experience. So that's the one that kind of recently has, like I said, rocked the boat a little bit. But those are kind of my biggest losses, I think. And then there's always, you know, the occasional mom's cousin or dad's somebody along the way that don't leave as much of a personal stamp. But those were the ones that recently have kind of shaken me. So I'm going to go into a little bit of what I have learned from some of these, because I have done a lot of learning over the past couple years, especially with the most recent two. So let's talk about some of the lessons here. So the first thing I learned is that the breakdowns are just inevitable. They're going to happen, and they're going to happen with different intensity at different times. Like, there is literally no predicting the breakdowns, and that's kind of just the way the world turns. Sometimes it'll be one and done. Like with my grandfather, like I had one really good, like deep, ugly, nasty cry, like the night it happened. And then the day afterwards, it happened on a Saturday night. And then the day afterwards, we went to church and I had like a pretty solid cry there too. But then after that, it never happened again, and it's been almost 3 years, and I have yet to have another like full on like nasty sobbing, like wailing, like that just doesn't happen for me. But this last loss, with that clergy member, family, friend, that one, there's been several breakdowns. There was one the night it happened, and then the day after, and then what was the other one? I think I was cool on that for a minute, and then mini one during the funeral, and then I was cool for a minute, and then literally like my last one, like that was a huge one, was just a couple weeks ago, and it was just like, it was messy. It was just, oh my god, it was so ugly. Guys, I didn't go to class. Like, I called off work that day. I just was in a terrible place. What triggered it was that I was talking to my mom, and I, you know, that past tense really kind of sneaks up on you sometimes, and I forgot that I was supposed to be talking about stuff in past tense, and I was speaking in present tense for a minute when I shouldn't have been, and it kind of just threw me off, and I just, like, started wailing, I mean just like screaming. It was so bad. But that was a couple weeks ago, or really I don't have any concept of time, so that was probably closer to like a month ago. But I think I'm good on that for a minute. That was my last like major one, but the breakdowns are gonna happen, and there's really no predicting when. There's really no, sometimes you kind of just have to cry through it. I know there's this whole, like, be strong mentality or whatever, but sometimes you really do need to just cry and scream through it. Kind of the same thing goes for good days and bad days, you know? There are some days that you're going to have a really good day, and, like, I don't define a good day as, like, forgetting that it happened, because that's not really what it is. It's a good day, I think, is when you can, like, be cognizant in the back of your mind that like this is the reality of the circumstances now, but that it doesn't make you sad. I don't know, like you're too busy concentrating on the relief is not the word I'm looking for, but just like the joy of knowing that this person isn't in pain or isn't suffering anymore, or you concentrate on the memories or just other things that make you happy, and that's a good day for me, is when I can live with it. I don't think you'll ever not feel it, but a good day I think is when you can live with it. And then you're gonna have bad days where the tiniest little thing will set you off. Like with my grandfather, he was obsessed with Gladys Knight music, and this one particular day I thought I was having a good day, and I was just kind of, I put my Spotify thing on shuffle, and a Gladys Knight song came on, and I absolutely lost my mind. That wasn't like breakdown though, that was just like a quick cry. But like stuff like that'll happen too, and you kind of just have to give yourself room to not be okay all the time, and just kind of lean into the fact that some days are going to be better than others, and that this is a process, and that this takes time, and that there's no definitive period when you're supposed to be done or when you will be done. And that's the thing that I've had to explain to my friends recently. Especially, I think some of them may not necessarily understand as much, because from the outside looking in, this wasn't a person that was related to me, so it might be difficult to kind of understand that relationship. But what I've tried to explain to people is that you have to be patient. You know, you just, these things just take time. And I guarantee you it's more of an inconvenience for me than it is for you. So if I don't feel, if it appears like I feel 100% one day and then the next day I don't, that's just part of the process. And you kind of just have to lean into my process as part of being a friend and as part of being there for someone. You have to be there for the good days and you have to be there for the bad days. And on the bad days, sometimes it's not going to be helpful to find things to distract me, or, oh, let's go shopping, or let's go see a movie. Like, sometimes that's not the cure for a bad day. Sometimes I need to just be silent through my bad days, or sometimes I need to talk about people through my bad days, you know, but, like, distraction isn't necessarily always the answer. I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all solution. Like I said, it's all just kind of part of the process in that way. Another thing I think people misconstrue is this idea of being strong. And I'm going to kind of connect this to faith a little bit as it relates to me personally. I wrote an entire essay about this, so like bear with me because I really could ramble about this, but I'm going to try to give you guys the Cliff Notes version is that being brave isn't about putting on this face and pretending that you're not going through this thing. I think being brave is being able to continue functioning through life in spite of the fact that this terrible thing has happened to you. And like, it is a terrible thing and you shouldn't feel obligated to pretend that it's not, or to go about your day pretending like everything's fine. I think that's one of the reasons why in the example that I referenced earlier with my grandfather's death and feeling like my friends in a lot of ways had kind of left me to my own devices to deal with that, I think a lot of that had to do with my misconstrued perception of bravery, and that I felt like it meant that I needed to pretend like I was okay even when I wasn't. And so because I appeared to be okay, people stopped checking in. You know, that's just what happens. People stop asking when it looks like you're fine. And so I can't entirely pin the blame on them for that. I think that I could have done a little bit better job of communicating what I'm feeling. And I've learned a lot over these past couple months, what it really means to be brave through trauma like this. And it has a lot to do with just the little things. You know, you don't have to be a hero. You don't have to try to save everybody else or try to empathize with everybody else who is dealing with this with you. To be considered brave, I think being brave is in the little things. There are some days that I feel brave for getting out of bed and going to class when I'm having a particularly tough day with it. And that's okay. Everybody's standard of that, I feel like, is different. So I think we kind of need to let go of the whole be strong mentality, because it doesn't really mean anything, and everybody's, where everybody's strength lies and where everybody's continuum of that is kind of on a different, everybody's in a different place with that, and everybody's bravery and tenacity are measured differently. And I don't think that people should be made to feel that by expressing any kind of emotion that they're somehow less brave or less strong. I think we really need to kind of like think about what we mean when we say that to people. And then I think that ties a lot into faith too, because I don't think that it means that you don't have faith in whatever, in God or in a higher power or in the universe's capacity to work this out overall. I don't think it means that you're less faithful just because you have a moment of despair. You know, I think we all have those moments, and I think we all have those times when it's difficult to trust in whatever plan there is or to make sense of why these things happen. And I think we need to all just kind of be cognizant of that too, and of that it doesn't make you, you shouldn't feel guilty about that. You know, it doesn't make you less faithful. It doesn't make you less spiritually in tuned to kind of wonder why these things happen sometimes. It's a human reaction, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles on that one. So another thing that people have a hard time dealing with is the regret aspect. I feel really, really, really blessed and just really fortunate in being able to say that in all of the major losses in my life that I don't have any regret tied to anything, that there's nothing that I wish I had done differently. Not to even necessarily say that I did everything perfectly, but just that I know that everything, I just have faith that everything unfolded the way in which it should have. And I think that's really one of the big keys to being able to learn to live with your grief, is to let go of whatever regrets you might have, and to just know that even if you can't see it now, that everything unfolded in that process in the way in which it was intended to, and the way that it was supposed to for your good. And even as I say those words, they sound so incredibly phony, because I know that there have been times that I didn't necessarily believe that, but I'm working on that, and I'm working on seeing that that's true. And I truly do believe that. I do believe that the universe unfolds as it should. And that God, because I am a believer in God, that God is very deliberate and very intentional in the plan for each of our lives and the way that these things are supposed to happen. So that has been a big key in my personal healing, is to either sit down and really reflect and come to terms with things, or to just let go of that regret just as a whole, has been really, really instrumental in my healing process. And I'm sure it would be instrumental in a lot of yours too, is to just really sit down and reflect and come to terms with that things happen the way that they did, and that things happen the way that they should, and that you can't harbor that regret, because it isn't doing anything. There's nothing that you can do. There's nothing that you can change about that situation. You can only learn from it and live with it. You know, let that inform other areas of your life. You can't live in it, but you can learn to live with the choices that you made and with the way that things panned out. I'm also learning to kind of deal with some of the other resulting feelings. I'm learning to kind of tap into and lean into and process the anger or the hurt or the frustration or the disappointment, and especially the anxiety, because that's been a really, really big one. My anxiety has definitely increased over the past couple years. I have really bad anxiety regarding like abandonment, not even just in the way of like people dying, but in both of these recent instances, there's been a lot of like underlying themes of abandonment from people that I thought I could trust. When my grandfather died, I had literally that night, a girl who at the time was my friend, text me and scream at me about an argument that we had had like days before. And when I explained to her that I really couldn't talk about it right then and there, 'cause I was sitting on the couch at my grandfather's apartment and he just died, she continued to like scream at me, and then she never spoke to me again. So that was difficult, not having her to process that with. And then with this last one, I had a friend that I would kind of discuss my feelings about the impending circumstances with, and she knew a lot about that, and I expressed a lot and became very vulnerable with this person. And a month or two maybe before it happened, she just kind of stopped speaking to me, and she hasn't spoken to me since. And so that's been really difficult. There's been a lot of anxiety there and a lot of processing there. I'm learning to work with those feelings. I'm getting help working with those feelings. So yeah, that's another thing that you kind of just have to really be emotionally intelligent and emotionally honest with yourself about what's going on and where you may need help outside of yourself to deal with that, whether that's just a really strong support system like what I have, just a really strong core group of friends, or if that's like a licensed mental health professional. There's no shame in that. I'm literally studying to be one, so you guys know I will always shamelessly plug that. So yeah, that's just another thing. It's just kind of learning to really be in tune and just be honest with yourself about what you're feeling and trying to find ways to cope with that. One thing that's really been helping me cope recently has been tapping into my own creativity. I've been doing a lot of writing, lots of essays, lots of poetry about not only the circumstances, but just memories and that sort of thing. And that's been really therapeutic. And I'm sure that everybody, you know, has their thing. So choreograph a dance or write a song or make a piece of artwork. And I know that sounds incredibly, incredibly, incredibly corny and like very Sesame Street of me, but like it helps. And I didn't think it would help, which is why I was super reluctant to try it when somebody recommended it to me at first. But like it works, like that stuff works. So I'm definitely going to plug that. Just tap into your creative self. That aspect of you can expose more about your feelings than I think any other part of the psyche. So just really kind of get in tune with that. I think that definitely helps a lot. I have tons of links for art exercises and other ways of creative channeling that relate to grief that have helped me a lot, or that I know people that those exercises have helped. So if you want any of those, definitely get in contact with me and I can slide them to you. You know, and then there's always the typical coping things of sometimes you really do just need to like rest, talk about it, you know, go on a walk or listen to calming music or drink some tea, all the stuff that sounds absolutely ridiculous and that you like to dismiss, but it actually is helpful. Some of that stuff has gotten me through some really difficult times, and that is not easy for me to admit that sometimes I really did need to just sit down and have a cup of tea, because that just sounds so weird and hippy-dippy and not actually helpful, but it is, I guarantee you. So those are some methods of coping, and then to just really surround yourself with a strong support system. And if you are somebody's support system, I know that you probably feel inclined to do all of the, well, actually, first of all, you probably may not even know what to do, because it's a really vulnerable and really weird time. And so I understand if you just have absolutely no clue how to help your friends through this. I've been there. I also understand if you want to do all the things and you want to call and you want to check in and you want to bake cake and you want to do all that, you want to go out and you just want to do everything you possibly can, because I've also been there and I still kind of am in there some days where it's like, oh, I need to check on so-and-so. I want to do this for so-and-so, but that doesn't feel like enough. I know this sounds so incredibly like Walgreens card aisle, like sympathy card, but just being there seriously is the best thing that you could possibly give to somebody. Like, you don't have to run 101 errands for them and like kidnap them to go to the mall or go to a movie to try to cheer them up. Just being there and just making yourself like emotionally available. For this last one, I had a friend who was the first person I called after I found out, and she sat with me on the phone for like 2 hours, and I didn't even talk that much. I just cried mostly, but she just listened. And then I had a friend that I talked to that night, and she was like, call me as soon as you wake up in the morning. She talked to me for like 5 hours that morning and just like let me decompress. And then that same friend I had talked to the night before, she came over that night with a bunch of snacks, and we sat around and she let me tell stories and show her pictures. And both of these individuals were just incredibly emotionally available and just checking in constantly. They were really aware that this was a process. And so as I went through different milestones on that process, they would check in and see how I was doing and ask not only about me, but they knew that other people that I love were affected by this and would ask about them, which was so incredibly sweet, because these are people they don't even know and they were still checking in on them. And to those two friends, I'm not going to like expose them or anything, but the two of them know who they are. I appreciate you guys for doing that. I really do. I love you so very much for that. That means more than you could ever possibly know to just be there. I had someone after my grandfather died. She came over. She didn't have any food in her hand. Thank you, God, because I was so sick of people coming to my door with food at that point. And she came over and she literally just sat at my dining room table and just like, when I wanted to talk, I could talk. And when I wanted to just sit there and cry or just be quiet, I could do that too. And she sat there, and she, when I didn't feel like talking and I wanted to hear noise, she told me stories about her grandparents and made me know that one day I wasn't going to feel like crap anymore. And poor her, her sad little clammy hand, because she held my hand for like 45 minutes straight, and it was just sweat, and it was just so gross and vulnerable and disgusting and beautiful and exactly what I needed. That is the number one thing that you can do to support people you know who are grieving, is just to be there, whether you're there physically or whether you just let them know that, like, hey, I'm here for anything you need. That means the absolute world to people. So yeah, I'm sorry this was so incredibly scattered, but honestly, I just wanted this to be really open and honest. I'm really committed to being honest with you guys, and so I tried to take notes, but my heart kind of led me in a different direction, and I just kind of started saying things, and I hope that the things that I was saying were helpful. That's really all I wanted to do with this, is I really just want to help somebody, because I know it's been a really cruddy couple months for me, and I just can't stand the thought of somebody that I know feeling like this when I have something to give. I mean, I'm not like a professional or anything, and I don't claim to have all the answers for grieving and dealing and all of that, but I have something to share. Everybody has something to share. And so I couldn't stand the thought of somebody being out there feeling the way that I'm feeling and not having anybody who understands that and who is kind of in their corner. And with that, I just wanted to say that if you ever need to talk about whoever, whatever, if I didn't know them, I don't care. If I didn't know the circumstances, if I don't know you, I really don't even care. If you need to just like decompress and de-griefify yourself, you are more than welcome to hit my DMs at Breeing Myself Podcast on Instagram, and I will talk to you for however long you need to be talked to, and I will listen for however long you need to be listened to. So that's really what I have to give on that. So thank you guys for tuning in. Like I said, I really hope that I was able to be helpful to someone with this. So if you have any questions, definitely hit me up. I'd love to take your questions or your comments or your concerns. You can DM me, like I said, or you can send a voice message. That's a handy dandy tool, and I am really loving that one. Next podcast, Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Topic to be revealed, because I am still trying to decide what midweek motivation is going to be. I think I'm going to go with the theme of stepping into your power. So let me know how you guys feel about that, and if that's something you want to hear about, because I think I might go that direction. That'll be Wednesday at 9. As always, you can find us here on Anchor. So that's a wrap on that. Sorry, I'm a little all over the place. This was a little bit of a toughie for me to record, but here we are. I did it. We all did it. We made it through that, and for those of you who are going through this process, I am sorry. But you know what? We're going to be okay. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next week, but eventually we're going to be okay. It takes time, but we're going to get there. So I will see you back here on Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Thank you guys once again for tuning in. All right. See you later, cyberspace.